Welcome to the ABCA's podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Brownlee. Coaches, let's talk about your new assistant, Rapsodo. With Rapsodo's products, you can track everything from how fast a pitcher throws to a batter's spin rate off the bat. Rapsodo's pro-level data gives you the power to look deeper into every athlete's skills, helping them take their game to the next level. Whether you want the basic data points or a more advanced look at a player, coaches can customize their dashboard to help identify strengths and weaknesses that the naked eye can't see. Turn the cage into a simulated field to make competition and practice more engaging. Take the guesswork out of coaching. From youth baseball to Major League Baseball, Rapsodo is used by thousands of colleges, facilities, and high schools to help their athletes train. Visit rapsodo.com/baseball to check out their lineup of game-changing technology and how you can implement them into your program. Play on. This episode is sponsored by Netting Pros. Netting professionals are improving programs one facility at a time. Netting Professionals specializes in the design, fabrication, and installation of custom netting for backstops, batting cages, dugouts, BP screens, and ball carts. They also design and install digital graphic wall padding, windscreen, turf protectors, dugout benches, dugout cubbies, and more. Netting Professionals is an official partner of the ABCA and continues to provide quality products and services to many high school, college, and professional fields, facilities, and stadiums throughout the country. Netting Professionals are improving programs one facility at a time. Contact them today at 844-620-2707 or info@nettingpros.com. Visit them online at www.nettingpros.com or check out Netting Pros on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn for all their latest products and projects. Make sure to let CEO Will Miner know that the ABCA sent you. Now on to the podcast. This week on the ABCA podcast is Missoula Mavericks head coach Brent Hathaway. Hathaway is one of the winningest coaches at any level with over 1,500 wins and 40 years of coaching. Hathaway played collegiately at Gonzaga and UTEP for college coaching legend Jim Lawler. After college, Hathaway went to work as a civil engineer before figuring out coaching and teaching was his passion. Hathaway spent 30 years teaching math at Hellgate Middle School and took over the Mavericks AA program in 1993. Hathaway is the longest tenured Legion coach in Montana. Let's welcome Brent Hathaway to the podcast. What's new?
Not a whole bunch, just waiting for the weather to clear up.
What's it look like for you guys right now?
You know, we're getting better. Lost our snow a little bit ago and just getting ready to open up this weekend.
Really? Is that with the middle school?
No, this is with American Legion Baseball.
Okay. Because I had read in your LinkedIn bio that, do you coach the middle school also?
No, I used to teach at the middle school. Okay. I taught there for 29 years.
Okay. When did you retire from teaching?
4 years ago.
Okay. How's that been?
Been great. COVID came along and it was time to get out.
Yeah. Yeah. You got out at the right time.
Absolutely.
It's changed a bunch. My wife's an eighth grade teacher, so it has changed a bunch.
Yeah. I taught eighth grade algebra and I loved it, but boy, that COVID threw a wrench into everything.
Yeah. Yep. All right, here with Brent Hathaway. Been with the Missoula Mavericks for over 30 years now. He's got over 1,500 wins. Was a grade school, elementary school teacher, middle school teacher, but just said he retired 4 years ago. So, Brent, thanks for jumping on with me.
You bet. Nice to be here, Ryan.
Yeah, this has been in the works for a while. You know, you and I were trying to get connected last year, but then circled back. So I'm glad we're able to do this. You know, you're at Hellgate Middle School. What is the history of Hellgate, the name?
You know, there's just a canyon around here that had to do with Hellgate. And we got a high school by the name of Hellgate as well. I don't know the real history of it, but yeah, it's I know there's a Hellgate Canyon that the wind blows down and through, and it can get pretty gnarly.
Yeah, and said you guys are still dealing with weather right now.
You know, we're probably one of the better places in the state, but we lost our snow a little bit ago, and you know, the grass is starting to turn green, and we had a great field work day the other day. Field's ready to go, and we open Saturday.
You guys have a natural surface?
Yes. Yes.
I have ties to the Missoula Mavericks, by the way, with the Welker family.
Oh, yeah. Chris is in town right now. He came down and worked out in our facility with their 12U group quite a bit. Chris was quite a ball player back in the day with us and moved on to Iowa and spent a little time with the White Sox.
Yeah, he had a really good career for us at Iowa, and then he coached with us for a little bit. So he and I had a heck of a road trip when he was our volunteer. We actually took the equipment out from Iowa and the Iowa Suburban from Iowa City to Fresno, California, which was, we split it up on the way out, but on the way back, we drove 27 straight hours back, just me and him in a Suburban.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a road trip.
And then Duke and I, actually we recruited Duke when I was at Iowa, when he was coming out of high school, went to Seminole, and then had a good career at Arkansas too.
Yeah. Duke was with us for a year, and then they moved back to Washington.
You know, high school baseball is being implemented in 2025, I think. Did Montana ever have high school baseball before that?
You know, I think they did a long, long time ago, and then Legion stepped in and kind of filled that void, and we have, you know, we have for a long time. You're correct. We started high school baseball last year with schools that wanted to jump in. You know, they kind of just threw it out there. They said, hey, we'll approve it. And so mostly it was the smaller schools, towns that only had one high school that jumped on board. And I think there was about 20 last year. There was a push in Missoula and also in Billings, two of the larger school districts in the state. And so the school boards both agreed that if they wanted it bad enough, the parents would have to fundraise the first year in Missoula to the tune of about 150 grand. And in Billings, they took it one step farther, and they told the parents if they wanted it, they'd have to fundraise it for the first 3 years. So we are scheduled to start high school baseball in 2025 in Missoula.
Well, and Legion was probably the right fit, correct? Because, I mean, obviously spring's not conducive in that area to have a season, so summer's obviously more Legion. There's only a couple states do summer high school baseball, Iowa and then Wisconsin, but obviously the Legion season's more conducive with your guys' weather, correct?
Absolutely. You know, we work out indoors all winter, 3 months indoors, and we just had tryouts 2 weeks ago, got outside for the first time, but the you know, the weather is so different year to year. Last year, I mean, there were high school teams that, you know, might have played 10 games. And that's in weather conditions that, you know, are not ideal.
Are Billings and Missoula historically the two best Legion programs in the state?
Yes.
Because I've been to Billings. I recruited, I don't know if you remember, Joe Kent.
Yes, I do.
I went to Billings to watch him play Legion, and then I did a home visit with him. But it's strikingly beautiful up in that part of the world.
Yeah, we love it here. But you know, back to your question, it's Billings, Missoula historically are the teams that have been most successful on a consistent basis. Lately, Helen has jumped into the mix, and they've been real solid for several years now.
Do you feel like the age increase at Legion affected Legion baseball overall?
Gosh, you know, I think it helps just because the numbers that we struggle with sometimes, you know, and especially in some of the smaller communities when you can get those, they call them super seniors.
Yep.
When those kids that are young enough, they can come back and play. You know, so I think that aspect has helped. You know, I'm not so sure. You know, those kids now are college kids. I mean, most of them go play college baseball. If they're not playing college baseball, they don't show an interest in coming back and playing that last year of Legion ball. So, you know, we push them. you know, just play regardless of if it's with us or if it's in a summer collegiate program. But it's nice to get those guys back because obviously they're some of your better players.
I was one of those kids. I actually had to play semi-pro after I graduated from high school because I had a June birthday. So my cutoff was weird. I wish we'd have had it back then. I'd graduated high school in 93. I wish we'd have had it because I would have much rather played with my Legion team, Pate Legion out of Evansville, than play semi-pro because semi-pro was guys just trying to hang on. It was a beer league basically. So I would have much rather played with the guys that I played Legion with. And I'm still a huge fan of Legion baseball.
Yeah, you know, I think it's the best national program. I mean, when you consider that these kids get to compete for, you know, a high school state championship, but then, you know, it moves on from there. You got a regional tournament that you get to participate in, and then, you know, the World Series has been fantastic out in the Carolinas. So, you know, and it's all paid for by the American Legion. It's, you know, and it's a community sport. You can't recruit, you know, you play the cards you're dealt, and, you know, it goes up and down as far as the talent, but no, it's an awesome program.
I have spoke about it. We do so many different podcasts at all levels, and I've said even with travel baseball, it needs to go to your guys' model because you have a buildup. I listened to one of your interviews talking about being able to take care of your arms early in the year because you have a buildup to a postseason tournament. Well, obviously, you want to win every game, but you need to have that build-up time to where you're playing for something at the end of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you know, we're going into this weekend, and I have some, you know, some really dedicated kids that have been, you know, playing and working out indoors for a long time. And, you know, we're still going to cap those guys at 60 pitches the first weekend. You know, and you're throwing guys that aren't going to see the mound later on in the year, but you know, you got to protect those frontline guys. So, it's important, you know, and you know, you can't ruin a kid's arm for a win.
Yep, for sure.
You know, so, they have a future and you got to take care of that.
What was your path in the game as a player?
You know, I grew up in Northern Idaho, played high school baseball and in similar weather to this. We used to sneak down to, I was from Moscow, so we used to sneak down to Lewiston, 33 miles away, and it was the, you know, the Sun Belt of Idaho. So there were times where, you know, there was snow up in Moscow, and we'd go down and get on the field in Lewiston, you know, home of Dwight Church and Ed Sheff and LCSC. And
I was just there last summer, by the way. I went to the NAIA World Series. I'm going back, so I'm excited. It's another beautiful part of the world.
Harris Field is an awesome venue, but no, I played high school baseball there, and then I played 2 years at the University of Idaho, also located there in Moscow, and they dropped their program. My younger brother and I, Dane, we were recruited to go to Gonzaga. Jim Lawler was the head coach at Gonzaga at that time, and so we both decided, hey, that sounded good. August rolled around and Jim called us up and he said, I just took the head job at UTEP. You guys want to go to Texas? And, you know, we kind of looked at each other and having never left Northern Idaho, we thought, what an adventure this will be. So we packed our bags and headed for El Paso.
Jim Lawler for me is one of the sharpest pitching minds I've ever been around. You just taught me something, by the way. I didn't realize that Coach Lawler was at Gonzaga before he headed to the state of Texas to coach. So you just taught me something. Coach Lawler for me is one of the best pitching minds we've ever had in the game.
Absolutely. I still stay in touch with him. You know, we go back and forth on holidays and birthdays and, you know, he's not just a great pitching mind, but he's a great, great human being. He took my brother and myself down to El Paso. And I'll tell you what, he took care of us. We were over at his place for Thanksgiving dinners. And, you know, when we couldn't get home, we were at his place. And, you know, those are the memories that I have, not so much the baseball, but Jim is just a really fine human being.
Did he nudge you to get into coaching?
You know, we talked about it. About hanging around UTEP and being a grad assistant. you know, but being raised in the Northwest, I'd had my fill of rocks and cactus. My playing days were over. And I actually was in civil engineering and had completed my junior year. So I came home, re-enrolled at the University of Idaho and was finishing up my degree there. And, you know, it hit me one time like a ton of bricks. I was trying to figure out a thermodynamics problem. And I thought, what the hell am I doing? This isn't what I want to do with the rest of my life. I want to be in a competitive environment. I want to be around athletes. And I made the change. It didn't take long. And I was, I got a job in Colorado as a math teacher and a baseball coach.
And then when did you take your job in Montana?
No, we spent 3 years in Colorado and then we came back up here. And so my first year in Missoula was in 1991.
And then did you get connected with the Mavericks right away when you got up there?
Yeah. My first 2 years in the program, I coached their, we call it an A team. It's basically a junior varsity team. And so I spent 2 years with that. And then in 93, I took over the varsity club and then the managerial positions of the program as well. So it's been a great run.
And you mentioned Legion too, as far as the community, and that goes into the fundraising piece too, because you guys have done a great job with your facility. I just think it's easier to raise money because it's staying in the community, correct?
Well, I don't know if you'd call it easy. you know, we work at it. You know, we have a program now that's, you know, I think our annual budget is pushing $300,000. You know, we have a beautiful indoor facility that we're paying the mortgage off. And it's a challenge, but it's certainly doable. And we do a good job of it.
You guys have won 6 state championships, correct?
I think you got us one short.
Okay, that was an interview that I listened to, so 7. So it's been almost every decade you've won one, correct, since you've been with Missoula?
Yeah, you know, this is my 32nd year, entering my 32nd year with the varsity, and we have 7 of them. And we've you know, played for it, I think, 3 or 4 other times. We're usually in there about one every 3 years.
And you talked about the differences now with pitch counts, because you guys have pitch counts now too, just as far as managing that tournament with the pitch count rules now.
Yeah, you know, and I still wish I knew the right answer or the right approach. Gosh, when you watch games and see how different coaches manage it, I mean, like the Legion World Series, I mean, you see clubs in there that, you know, they throw their guy 45 pitches, get him out, and they got him back 2 days later. And you see other guys roll him out for the entire, you know, for the entire game and burn him for the tournament. I just think it depends on the depth of your staff. And, you know, the kids, what kind of bounce back arms they have, where you can use them, you know, 2, possibly 3 times in a 5 day stretch, 6 day stretch. But that is one thing that's huge, and we really focus on it, and that's trying to build depth in that pitching staff. You can't do it with 2 guys.
And with your format, the Legion format, it allows you to get guys stretched out. And I agreed with you when I listened to your interview. The end of the year, if a guy's been stretched out, and yes, we're talking about 18, 19-year-old kids. You know, we're not talking about 11, 12-year-old kids. We're talking about, you know, kid who's older, has been stretched out. Those kids can go 100, 120-ish. You can't bring them back in 2 days. It's almost more harmful for a kid to throw less pitches more often than it is for a kid to throw 120 and then maybe on 3 days short rest, come back and throw again than the way it's set up now. But that stuff we talk about on the youth and travel committees all the time, it's like there's no right way to script this right now. But it's almost like when you're trying to gamify the system, if you're going to throw a kid 2 or 3 days in a row, that's actually worse than a kid that throws a day, gets 3 days off, and then throws again.
You know, I would agree. You know, what everybody used to do before we were saddled with this pitch count stuff. And again, I would put it this way. I'm a big believer and a big fan of taking care of a player's arms. But, you know, I think that right now, what are we at? 105 pitches for, you know, a 7-inning ball game, which, so you're looking at 15 pitches per inning. That would be ideal if you could do that. And I know that, you know, during the season, we were pretty strict as far as how many pitches they got. But when it came to the end of the year and you were, you know, pitching for staying alive or going home, it was not uncommon for us to throw a kid, you know, 130, 140 pitches. But they were in shape. The weather was warm. You know, I mean, Christ, back in the day, guys used to throw both ends of a doubleheader. I mean, so what's going on? And you wouldn't do it on a consistent basis, but, you know, and you're always checking with the kid, you know, how do you feel? What's the health of your arm? Were they stressful innings? You know, all those things, you know, play a part. But I wish we didn't have those. I think it's had an adverse effect on if the best team moves forward or not.
And it's had an adverse effect on injury. You look at the big leagues now. This is as cautious as they've ever been with those guys. But I think because they are so cautious, those guys know that they got short amount of bullets. So even if I'm a starter at the big league level and I know I'm probably going to be done after 60 pitches, I know I can let it rip. Where in the past, if you knew you had to try to get 8 or 9 innings, you had to conserve some pitches. I know why pitchers are doing that now. Justin Verlander had a really good interview that came out this week talking about it. But in the past, your starter knew he was going to have to get as much as he could, so he was going to have to conserve. Where now, it's almost like your starters at the big league level are relievers also.
Yeah, and you know, they go so max effort on every pitch. I mean, it's incredible, you know, the number of guys that are throwing in triple digits now. And it's also incredible the number of injuries that we have. I just don't believe that the human arm from throwing in an overhand position is meant to sustain that type of stress.
But Verlander made a great point. You know, he said, you know, when the ball changed and then 1 through 9, somebody can take you deep. It's no longer pitching to contact. It's trying to get swings and misses. And then, you know, somebody said when they've taken the sticky stuff away from the pitchers too at the big league level, they have to squeeze the ball harder, which puts a lot more stress on the ligaments of the elbow because they're squeezing the ball a lot harder than they used to in the past.
That is something I haven't been exposed to. That is very interesting.
Yep. Yep. Who's the best player to come out of Montana?
Out of Montana?
Yeah.
Or out of Missoula.
I mean, you've been in that landscape. Who's been the best kid you've seen at the Legion level in Missoula and then outside of Missoula too?
You know, I've had a couple. Will Thompson was probably our truest hitter, big left-handed kid that ran well. He was down at University of Arizona and played in the Giants organization. And, you know, he made it up to AAA ball and sustained a knee injury that was basically ended his career. And then we had Brody Miller, who was an All-American at MSUB, holds our home run record here, all 5'9" of him. You know, those two stand out. And I know there's several others. Cameron Reimers was a pitcher for us here. I got his boy on the club right now. Cam spent 7-8 years in pro ball. He was a pitcher, made it to AAA as well. We haven't had anybody crack that major league level yet, but we're working at it. As far as the state goes, you know, there are some guys that made it up to pro ball, and I'm not real versed on, you know, all of them, but there have been a few.
You know, they said, you know, you've had 150 plus players go on and play either college or pro ball. What separated those guys for you, the guys that made it and the ones that didn't, outside of talent?
Outside of talent, you know, it's that fight in the dog. You know, it's something that they just have, and that competitiveness, and you know, they just persevered through any type of challenge that was presented to them. and all of them were a little bit cocky. They thought quite a bit of themselves, and you got to have that.
You have to. I call it confidence. Like, people call it cocky. For me, it's like people that aren't competitive, they'll call somebody cocky. But those of us that have been in the competitive arena, it's just confidence. You have to have that. You have to have that belief in yourself.
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, we've had multiple players that were not all that talented, but had that outlook on life, and they were successful, which, you know, just says a bunch about, you know, that mental side and believing in yourself. And, you know, and they're playing college baseball, which blows me away. And, you know, so, yeah, the mind over matter in a lot of cases. But, yeah, they were very talented.
Now that you're in your competitive segment, how does practice, you know, days of practice, days that you play, how does that line up during the week for you now?
Well, you know, right now what we're trying to do is we're really working at trying to get them in that live game mode, putting them in that. And so, you know, the last, I guess about, you know, 10 days, we've been having a lot of live arm at bats. You know, we have 16 guys on the club, so, you know, we'll roll out four pitchers and they'll face four hitters with a defense. And, you know, yesterday we did it, you know, full uniforms, and just trying to get that feel of when we step on the field Saturday, that it's not, you know, that oh wow moment. It's all right, you know, excited to play, and we've been in this situation already this year.
Have you seen the way that pitchers and hitters are coached evolve?
Well, the pitching, obviously, you know, just so much of riding that backside and trying to stay over that back foot as long as you can. You know, that's been a big thing. I was thinking about that the other day, and I mean, you know, I pitched at the D1 collegiate level, and I can never remember a coach saying that to me. You know, it was, you know, I just never heard that terminology. And so that's really big. We got a guy here now working with our pitchers, strikeout leader at Ohio University. And I mean, that's basically all he preaches to the guys is, you know, stay back, you know, stay in that backside as long as you can. As far as hitters, you know, we try not to mimic what we see on TV. We play in a huge park. We're 16 to 19 years old, and launch angle and all of that stuff, it's worthless to us. I mean, you know, a 360 foot fly ball in a 410 foot park isn't out. We're still trying to hit it hard on the ground, hit it on the line, and stay out of the air as much as possible.
I think everybody's doing that. I mean, everybody's talked about, you know, every ball, batted ball has a launch angle, but I think you're starting to see the offensive numbers start to come back because people have gotten away from that and gotten back to the way they should of just hitting hard line.
Yeah, I found something interesting. I have a good friend up in Cranbrook that's a coach, and he, I don't know how he affords it, but he attends all of the conferences, and he was at the ABCA, and he was in Denver, and he called me up and he said, you know, have you heard anything about wanting to get pitchers back throwing on a flatter angle? Then, you know, it was always create, you know, why was the 6'7" lefty that had the, you know, that real down trajectory so popular? And, you know, then the launch angle came along. And so all of a sudden now they're matching up with plane of the pitch and plane of the swing. And, you know, and he's saying they're talking about now they want pitchers to throw flatter. And that's new. And when you think about it, the guy's swinging up and you're throwing flat, he's got one point of contact, and it's certainly not as consistent as when you can keep the barrel in the zone for a long period of time.
Yeah. Well, you know, you look at the good hitters in the old days, they could catch up to an elevated fastball, which is why pitchers wouldn't throw up there. But now, since guys are having, and guys are throwing harder now consistently, you know, because of that, they do want to ride the ball a little bit more up, just because hitters now are having a hard time catching up to it.
Yeah, you know, and I just think it's cool how the game changes, and when, you know, one side finds an advantage, how the other side adjusts, and vice versa. you know, changing the height of the mound and all of that back in the day. I just find it, it's a great cat and mouse game. Greatest game ever.
You mentioned you're trying to get 60 pitches out of your guys first time out of the chute. What have they been built up to in bullpens up to this point?
You know, we were pushing 45, 50 our last indoor session. We've actually shortened it up now while we're outdoors. You know, when a hitter gets in the box, it's a little more of a max effort. The adrenaline starts pumping a little bit. And so, yeah, we're good to go. Their arms are healthy. They've been throwing. Like I said, we finished in August last year, and some of them took, you know, a month off, and they got right back into it. We have a couple, you know, like I mentioned earlier, Cameron Reimers is a guy that his boy's in the program. He gives lessons here. You know, Eddie, our on staff guy from Ohio, he's been working since January. So, you know, they've been throwing for 3-4 months already. So it's not like, you know, I'll put it this way. It's not like high school baseball in Montana. I mean, they give those kids 10 days of practice and they start playing. And that's a real concern for us as Legion coaches is, you know, what are we going to get when those kids are done playing high school baseball and we get them at the end of May? Yep.
Within those 45 pitches, how are you guys splitting those up? So say, you know, is it 10 pitches a set? Is it 15 pitches a set? How are you splitting those pitches up?
In practice?
Yes.
You know, we never let them throw over 25 or 30, you know, without taking them off the mound. Most of our stuff is, we start with a 1-1 count on the hitter. We go through a set number of at bats. I track all the pitches, you know, and so sometimes they're out there for 14 pitches. Other times they're out there for 22 pitches. You know, it just depends on the success of the hitter and the longevity of the outing.
Yeah, because for me, if you have a kid that gets to 20 pitches, inning's probably not going great. If they get to 30, chances are somebody's going to be in out of the bullpen if they get to that. They're never going to get to that number probably ever in a game.
No, they won't, you know. And you know as well as I do that when you roll a kid out to start a ball game and if he's at 30 pitches in the first inning, you're already looking down the bench looking for – okay, who's next?
You know, you mentioned you're retired from middle school teaching, but what did you enjoy about being in the middle school?
You know, honestly, the relationship with my students, I think that's why everybody gets into that line of work is that you enjoy, you know, teaching them, helping them, watching them grow. We had an awesome staff at Hellgate and, you know, I miss that socialization aspect of being retired, but I wouldn't go back. I'm enjoying what I do right now. I spend an awful lot of time in the outdoors. I hunt, I fish. You know, I still heat my shop and my house with wood. I cut a ton of firewood. I stay as active as I can. You know, I'm social during baseball season, and then I kind of turn into a hermit in the off season and, you know, do my thing.
Well, and the benefit for you being in the middle school is you're going to see future players then, too.
Yeah. Now, you know, we had a bunch of them that I would have in my eighth grade class, and they would eventually show up. You know, we have three clubs in our program now, but for the longest time, it was only two. And so we had the A and the double A, and the age of those A kids was usually, you know, they came up at 16 years old. Now that we've offered a B team, like our B team last year, we had 16 brand new faces. They were all eighth graders. So they're 13 years old. And they're all back this year. Most of them are playing up at the JV level as 14. We're young, but talented. But adding that lower tier, I think, has really helped our program.
Well, and it helps bridge the gap, too. So those eighth graders, what were they doing? What are the local youth baseball leagues like in Missoula?
You know, we used to be a really strong little league program here. And then I think as what happened in an awful lot of places, travel ball was introduced, pay to play. You know, our little league system broke down. Our numbers went down. It's starting to come back a little bit in the last few years. But, you know, the pool that we were drawing from for a period of time got much smaller, and it did have an adverse effect on our program as well.
Yeah, I think we're starting to see those numbers creep back a little bit for a variety of reasons. It all trickles down from college on down, and I think we're starting to see the house baseball come back a little bit more for a variety of reasons now. What would you like to see out of youth baseball and the players that are showing up that maybe they're not getting right now out on the youth side?
Yeah, you know, I really think, and I'm not faulting anybody on this, but like I said, when we had a strong little league program, and I actually have a couple guys on staff that played during that time, but what we saw was the coaching at that level at that time was very good. And so when we got those kids at 16 years old, fundamentally, they were pretty sound. What we're seeing now is that that's not the case. And we spend more time trying to fix problems instead of trying to teach. You know, you'd be better off if you started with a blank slate than what they come in with, because, you know, they have ingrained habits that are just so tough to break. And, you know, what do they say? 10,000 reps to change something. Well, you know, try to get a 13-year-old to do something 10,000 times, you know? And so that's why we see, just such a huge improvement from, when they're 13 and in eighth grade and enter our program until the next year, because, you know, they never practiced every day. They didn't play a 50 or 60 game schedule. And so the improvement level that we see is incredible. So I just wish we had that coaching aspect of it down below, but you know, that's kind of broken down.
And that's where we see the drop off too. You look at the participation levels for baseball with the Apex numbers that just came out, or the Aspen numbers that just came out. Where we're losing them is when they get to the big field and playing 60-90. How are you trying to help those guys transition, those 13-year-olds, to the big field?
Boy, it's a chore, I'll tell you. You know, watch a 13-year-old that hasn't done much to develop his arm strength trying to throw it from the six hole to first base. You know, they play in quite a bit, I'll tell you that. But you're right. That's one of the reasons why we added that eighth grade program. The B program was, if those kids aren't playing Legion baseball and they go to high school, we never see them again. We lose them at 13 years old.
Yep.
Now, I don't know if high school baseball is going to change that. You know, I have a sneaking suspicion that you're going to see an awful lot of kids that are going to get their fix by playing high school baseball. And then, you know, Montana is a great place to have fun in the summer, the lakes and everything to go do. So, people tell me that, you know, the numbers of Legion are going to go way up, yet to be proven. We'll see what happens.
I just think it's a great, you have to have both for me. I mean, in a perfect world, they play both seasons, especially if a kid is trying to go play at the next level. You need to play as many games as you possibly can. I just think it's a great marriage between the two. And for me, it's the way it used to be. I just think that's why we had a lot more kids playing on the big field back in those days.
Yeah. But, you know, kind of being the devil's advocate here and being an old Legion guy, you know, when I look at our AA schedule, when we have high school baseball next year, we're going to lose about 35 games off of our schedule. And those kids, when they were playing with the Legion Club, they're playing against some very, very talented opponents in Helena and Billings and Rapid City and you know, things like that. And they're being pushed to develop, and mistakes that they make, they pay for, and they learn quickly. You know, our high school program is just in its initial phase, but we have an all class state high school program going on here. So,
oh, wow.
You know, Missoula is going to be playing, you know, some of these small towns that don't even have Legion baseball. I mean, Missoula will be playing Frenchtown,
yep.
And R. Lee and something like that. And, you know, so they're not going to get challenged, and they actually are going to miss out on playing the number of games that they would if it was just the Legion program.
Did you ever think you'd get to 1,500 wins?
No. No,
that's a large number. I mean, you can put that up against anybody at any level of baseball.
Yeah, you know, and people mention it, and my usual reply is, if you hang around long enough, stuff happens.
That's not true. You could have given me 30-plus years as a head coach. I don't think I'm getting to 1,500 wins.
I've been fortunate to have some really good players. Our program is very supportive. You know, I just think that our program matches up with anybody's in the Northwest. I can't speak for outside of that region, but, you know, we're right up there, developing talent, getting kids to move on, you know, just our culture, you know, and I think when you do those things, the wins come. It's just part of it.
Those young coaches in your program now, how are you trying to mentor them?
You know, most of them are former players. We actually have 10 right now, and there's only two of them that didn't play for me. You know, so they know what I'm like, and they know the expectations of the program. But honestly, they played college baseball. They're very knowledgeable, and the only thing that I try to tell them to do is to, you know, be yourself. You know, you gotta feel comfortable in your own skin. You know, don't try to be like me. Don't try to be like somebody else. You know, I hired a guy back that, you know, he's a happy-go-lucky guy. He spent, you know, several years in another town, and they were kept telling him, you know, you need to be a little more serious, and, you know, getting on him about just his natural personality. And I said, hey, be yourself. You know, the kids recognize it, you know, but we don't do a whole bunch as far as, you know, different or specific. I let them coach.
I mean, really, what drew you to a life of service? I mean, you could have stayed in doing thermodynamics and made a lot more money than probably what you made up to this point. But what drew you to a life of service?
Well, one, money was never a real motivator for me. You know, what's your definition of rich? I mean, I live on a mountaintop in a mobile home. And I hunt elk from walking from the house, and I fish, and I got a beautiful wife, and I got it made. You know, but again, you know, I read something the other day. It was the coach that was saying, you know, what was your reason why? He was talking about, why did you get into this stuff? And it really got me thinking about it. And, you know, I think it changes. You know, when I first started coaching, obviously I was out to prove to the world that I could coach and that I could win. And so winning was everything. It really was. And the way I coached was different as well. I think after you win a little bit and, you know, you find yourself in a position where, former ball players are calling you back up on Christmas or your birthday and wishing you the best. And it's those relationships that, really mean the most. And I think, you know, when I do get out of this, those are going to be the things that are going to have meant the most to me. And the wins are just wins. But you got to have them to stay in it.
Well, when I saw your picture, I mean, obviously you and I have never met face to face, but when I saw your picture, I was like, he looks extremely young. And I think the amount of time that you spend outside, not just coaching, but with your other hobbies, I think that's a longevity piece for you.
It is. It's also genetic. My father is 95 years old, and he goes to the gym every day. He lives at home by himself, and he still drives himself. and he's as sharp as a tack. So I'm hoping that I get some of that, but I don't plan on coaching when I'm 95. I'll tell you that much.
I don't know. I think you got it in you, actually. What are some other things you learned from your dad?
You know, probably, you know, he's the most respected person I think I've ever known. And I know it's because he's my father, but just, you know, his work ethic, you know, the integrity that he approached life with, just doing things the right way, you know, and in something that's been passed on, you know, to me and my expectations of players is, you know, the commitment and the responsibility that you have towards your team. That, you know, it's always team in front of you. And I'll give you an example. And I stated this the other day with some of our players and coaches. My brother and I, we were on the same Legion baseball team at the time. Our family was having my grandparents' 50th wedding anniversary and a family reunion in Coeur d'Alene. And Dad put us on the bus for a doubleheader in the Tri-Cities. And said, you have a responsibility to your team. Go do it. So that's pretty rare anymore. I mean, especially with travel ball teams and kids playing on two or three or four different teams and stuff like that. So, yeah, just, you know, the commitment that you have to a team and that stuck.
Do you have a fail forward moment? Do you have something you thought was going to sidetrack you or set you back? And looking back now, is one of the best things that happened to you or helped you move forward?
Oh gosh, you know, one of the things that helped me move forward was I know the year I took over the AA program, we had a group of it's my turn seniors that have been hanging around that. Weren't overly talented, and we also had a group of extremely talented sophomores, and I let all the seniors go and kept the sophomores. 2 years later, they were 73-18 and failed to get to the World Series by one win, and that really, I think, set the program on the kind of the course that it's been on, you know.
Well, because the Mavericks had been through quite a few different managers up to that point, correct?
Yeah, Charlie Palmer. I did a podcast with Charlie Palmer once, and he had a list of the longevity of coaches with the Mavericks, and I think the longest one was 1 year. And so, yeah, I've managed to hang on, stay alive. I've dodged a few bullets, as all coaches do. I think you're hired to get fired, especially in this day and age. One of the reasons why I didn't want anything to do with college baseball, there was so much emphasis on you have to win or you're done. I think at this level, if you, you know, if you teach the game and you're good with the kid, then they're treated fairly and given an opportunity. I think you have a chance of hanging around, and I have.
How did you handle that with those seniors? You say, hey, you know, this isn't working out.
Well, you know, and again, that was toward the beginning of my coaching career.
And in an era where it was readily more accepted. My dad used to call it addition by subtraction.
So. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, we kept the kids that we felt that when we put them on the field, we're going to give us the best chance to win.
Yep.
And, you know, there's nothing worse than a disgruntled senior sitting on the bench. I mean, the chemistry of the club goes down the toilet. And so you're better off, you know, cutting your ties and facing the music one time and then moving forward. And that's basically what we did.
Yep. Do you have a parent program with the Mavericks?
As far as?
You have a booster club, or does the Legion take care of most of that?
You know, we have a fully staffed board. We have 11 members on our board that, you know, I handle the baseball side of things and they handle everything else. And it's a cooperative effort. I certainly couldn't do what I do without their help and vice versa. I would hate to see them filling out the lineup card. and certainly wouldn't want to have to deal with the financial aspect of things and all of the things that they do. I mean, It's overwhelming. Sometimes when I think about it, I think, what in the hell did I get myself into? But if I just focus on the baseball side of it and let them handle their stuff, it works out pretty well.
Yeah, you guys call it A and double A, but, you know, in Evansville, it was Junior Legion and Legion. So basically, the younger guys played for the Junior Legion. But I remember selling raffle tickets. We used to do a winter dinner to raise money for the Legion, but the players would have to sell raffle tickets during the meal.
Yeah, you know, we sell raffle tickets. We sell what we call sponsorships, where the kids will go out and approach businesses or individuals, and that person will sponsor the player for X number of dollars. And, you know, in return, they're listed in the program and they're given season passes and, you know, but, just about everybody will support a kid that's wanting to play some type of sport and is willing to go out and work for it.
For you, being from the Northwest, going all the way down to Texas, was that a culture shock for you?
Oh, boy.
Because I've been to El Paso.
You know, and, you know, it wasn't as bad because I was with my younger brother. But honestly, you know, I can remember having one black friend when I was in elementary school. We went to El Paso, and I had some teammates at Idaho as well, but we went to El Paso, and I mean, you know, I think 60% of the population was Hispanic, and about 25% were black. And then there were a few of us white guys running around. It was a culture shock, yes. But it was an experience that I'd never pass up. I look back on it, and it was one of the best things that ever happened. I made some great, great friends that I still am in touch with.
That's a great thing about the baseball community is it's a melting pot. And, you know, a move like that where, I mean, you go, how many hours is that from home? Like 30 hours from home, maybe?
It was a drive, yeah. We used to, Dane and I used to drive it, and we'd go 5 hours on, 5 hours off. You know, and it took us a while to get there, but
you grow, you know, you grow as a human being. Like if you never left the Northwest and didn't get exposed to that environment, that doesn't help you grow as a human.
Oh, I agree 100%. And, you know, the experiences that I had down there, you know, coming from a cold water state, I remember one time that we had a freeze in El Paso, which was unheard of. And there was some ice and frost on the window, and of a couple of our teammates who had never been outside of Arizona thought it would be a good idea to take down a pot of hot water and pour it on the windshield to get the. And I thought, that's not how you do it, boys, you know.
Did they crack their windshield?
Yes, they did.
Yeah, of
yes,
course they did.
But yeah, just it was unbelievable. I'd do it again. And you know, when kids ask me, you know, about hanging around here, I mean, we don't have a lot of baseball in Montana past Legion. I mean, we have a couple colleges. But I always tell them, hey, get out. You can always come back. Montana will still be here, and you'll love it even more once you get out and see the rest of the world.
What are some of the other things you learned from Coach Lawler?
Oh, wow. You know, one that he appreciated us for who we were. You know, he knew that he was getting a couple of kids from Northern Idaho that enjoyed doing a lot of kind of crazy stuff. I mean, we brought all our guns down there. We hooked up with a couple of guys from Washington that had kind of the same upbringing. So we used to, you know, go out and we'd ride around the back of the pickups, shooting rabbits and having a good old time. And Jim just loved it. You know, he was always making fun of us, but respected us for who we were and what we wanted to do. And, you know, as long as we showed up and played baseball, he was good with it. And he took care of us, like I said.
What other resources did you dive into outside of the ABCA stuff?
You know, I read a lot. I'm a student of the game. I watch so much baseball. It's not even funny. My wife's mom works for the Rockies. So I'm constantly watching the Rockies, which that's been tough to do lately. Just watching what the good guys do. I love watching college baseball, how schooled and how, mechanically how sound they are, and, just trying to transfer that to our players and just enjoying, trying to get good at teaching the game through observation, really.
Do you have a favorite book?
There's a couple of them. We had our first Charlie Palmer, who's a professor here at the university. His son went through our program, spent 5 years here, and Charlie is a guy that teaches leadership courses, ethic courses at the university. Traveled around the world teaching leadership courses to firefighters. Was a consultant for the New York Giants. We had our first session last night. It's a 6-session on the mental aspects of the game that he's leading us through this. Dorfman.
Yep. It's my favorite book. That's how it got me started.
Yeah. This one is the mental keys of hitting is what we're using. He had another one with the mental aspects of baseball, which, I don't know if the name sounds familiar to you, but one of the guys that I looked up to a bunch was Dave Plouffe out of Rapid City.
Yep.
Dave was there for 47 years. I think he won 30 some state championships. And
I'd always see them in Minneapolis. They'd come over and play in the Gopher Classic. So I always saw Rapid City there.
Story reading for Dave's players. And I remember I went down there for the first time in 2001 with a club, and we were pretty talented, and we beat up on Dave and went through the tournament. And he said, "How'd you like to come back to our real tournament, which is over the 4th of July?" And we had some epic battles with them.
It's called the Firecracker, isn't it?
Yep. And we're playing Firecracker night again this year. Longest standing team in that tournament. It used to be Vegas, but they dropped out a few years back. So we're kind of a local favorite if 22 is not playing. But, I picked Dave's brain a lot, and we'd go to breakfast, and he was a real mentor for me. But that book that he made mandatory was something that I've read multiple times, and there's some really, really good stuff in it.
What are some other leadership things that Professor Palmer relays to your team?
In our mission statement, the three things that we really focus in on are commitment, perseverance, and integrity. And it's not just commitment to team, but and saying it, but it's your actions that speak louder than anything else. So, with our program, the commitment's huge, and the amount of time that we spend at the field or as a group is really, I think, impressive. If you're a baseball guy and you want to be, in that baseball world, this is a great program to be. If you want to work, and if you want to get a job, and if you want to hang out with your girlfriend, we're not the place. Actions speak louder than the words. And with, the perseverance and, the integrity aspect of it as well. That's kind of, how we develop the culture around here.
Have you always had that mission statement with the program?
No, we haven't. I have always said that, people ask me, what do you want to do? And I said, I just want our kids to play the game the right way. And it was pretty much that simple. It was 4 or 5 years ago where we got a new group in that said, we should have a mission statement that kind of puts out there what we stand for. And so, through a lot of dialogue and discussion with coaches and board members and parents, that's kind of what we came up with, was, building a culture and building a baseball community with those values. And, it's worked out well.
For me, that's where the best ideas come from that are player driven.
Absolutely.
It sticks. Like for me, those things like that come from the players, they stick because the players feel like they have ownership in it.
Yes, I mean, they buy in 100%. You know, they're the ones that are making the decisions, and since they made it, they have to stick to it. You know, and an awful lot of our decisions are based on, you know, just that. I mean, Bobo Brayton was a huge influence of mine when he was at Washington State. My younger brother played for him. One of the things that impressed me about the Cougs was, you know, if you went over and you watched them, they all wore their uniform exactly the same. They looked like a team. That's the meaning of uniform. You know, that was something that I brought here. We wear our uniforms the same. We don't have guys with pants up and pants down and sleeves and no sleeves. And, you know, the hats are worn forward and the jerseys are tucked in. If you got it on, it's going to be worn right. You know, and some people think it's nitpicky, and but, you know, when you pay attention to little things, usually the big things fall into line as well.
I think we need to bring that back a little bit. I mean, what other accountability stuff do you have for them?
You know, they're just accountable for, you know, always being on time. If you're not 15 minutes early, you're late. You know, their conduct on the field, they know that. You know, like I just like to say, we're playing the game right. We play it hard. We hustle. You know, you'll see us run on the field, off the field. You know, we don't show people up. We don't second guess umpires. That's my job. You know, those types of things. And, you know, it's a good fit for some kids and they fit into the mold, and other kids, it's not so much so.
What are some final thoughts before I let you go, Coach?
Final thoughts, huh? You know, one, I appreciate the opportunity to visit with you. I think it's been over a year since we've been trying to put something together. I just appreciate being able to, you know, kind of express myself a little bit and what I've learned over the years, and promote our program, and really what I think is, you know, the right way to do things. And I, like you said, I wish we would see more teams, more coaches, more players going back to that. I really do. I get awful frustrated with, you know, they say it's entertainment, but gosh, I watch all the bat flips and all that stuff going on. And, you know, there's two sides to every story, but, you know,
for good me, as long as it's not directed at the other team, we're good.
Yeah, but, you know, good players are recognized for being good, not by, you know, outside antics and actions that they take to draw attention to themselves, is what I you know, try to get with our guys. And, you know, you see all the doubles and the triples, and they got all their stuff that they do with their sign language back to the dugout. And I get it. I mean, I'm old school, but I think we could reel it back in a little bit.
Brent, thanks so much for your time. I'd say I'd see you in Lewiston at the end of May, but it looks like it's 4.5 hours from Lewiston to Missoula, so I probably won't see you when I get out there.
No, and we're playing. We got our Memorial Day tournament going on at the same time, and so we're getting busy now, but it's a fun busy.
Yep, for sure. All right, well, have a great rest of the year.
Thank you, Ryan. Appreciate you.
I'm a big fan of Coach Hathaway instilling accountability in this generation of players. We're missing that as a society. Thanks again to Brent for sitting down with me. Thanks again to Jim Richardson, John Litchfield, Zach Hale, Matt West, and Antonio Walker in the ABC office for all their help on the podcast. Feel free to reach out to me via email at rbrownlee@abca.org, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at @coachb_ABCA, or direct message me via the MyBCA app. This is Ryan Brownlee signing off for the American Baseball Coaches Association. Thanks, and leave it better for those behind you. In the world, keeps on turning.